नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Lord Brahma said, after thus congratulating the sages for their nice words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose abode is in the kingdom of God, spoke as follows. Dhruva Maharaj, when he first had darshan of Lord Vishnu, he was dumbstruck, or he could not speak. But when he was touched by the Lord, then he became very eloquent in his offering of prayers to the Lord. And throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, or just in any situation in the material world, we can understand how the power of speech and eloquent speech, or speaking nicely, is very, very important. Lord Krishna, of course, he doesn't need anything. He's Atma Rama. And it is our need to propitiate him, to attract him, to invoke his mercy. That is our need. So he explains, Yome Bhakta Prayatsati, that whatever you do in love and devotion, that I can accept. So in the same way speaking, we may not be the most eloquent speakers, but whatever attempts we make to glorify the Lord in love and devotion, he appreciates that. Now, in this case, of course, the four Kumaras are the original scholars in the universe. So potent were they that they just arbitrarily decided to remain as young children. And you'll see it in India, that young children wander in the courtyard of their houses or their family's house, or in some cases in the street, but they wander around naked. At very best, they'll have something tied around their waist, but there's no extra copa, and they just wander around naked. It's, of course, air-conditioned, and also, it's just there's no need for them to be clothed. Neither are they distracting anyone, nor are they distracted. They're completely pure. So the four Kumaras, they wander around in a naked condition. And although they are, of course, childlike, but they are the most elevated scholars at the same time. So when they offered prayers to Lord Krishna and to Lord Vishnu, he was very pleased by their offering. But he's got a problem. Not a problem, an opportunity. He has to satisfy the Kumaras, and yet his other devotees, Jai and Vijay, who instigated the wrath of the Kumaras by their behavior, they had to be dealt with, but they're also his devotees doing yeoman service. They're not desirous of internal service. They're satisfied with being the gatekeepers of the Lord. And that is the unique feature of devotional service. When you are attempting to satisfy Krishna, and when you're making progress in satisfying Krishna, you really don't have a great deal of competitive discrimination or competitive desire to have this service or that service. A devotee is simply interested in pleasing the Lord as the Lord would like to be pleased. For example, karma yoga means that I want to serve the Lord by doing what I want to do, and I'll offer the fruits to him. But bhakti yoga means whatever the Lord wants me to do, I have whatever preferences or talents that I may have, and of course they're God-given, but I'm prepared to do whatever is required, whatever the Lord wants me to. And hence, Srila Prabhupada's most profound instruction to his early disciples was, do the needful. And by saying that, it was a super lesson in devotional service. Do what is necessary. Don't be attached to a particular position, but phalena phalakarana manumiyate. If you get results, that's what we're interested in. Print magazines, print books, attract people, invite them to take advantage of this philosophy, invite them to be devotees in the ashram or devotees in their house, somehow or other connected with Krishna consciousness. That was a very powerful instruction. So here we're going to see the four Kumaras, their curse is going to be fulfilled, but in such a way that Krishna is satisfied. It's a win-win-win situation. It's really top of the line Stephen Covey stuff. Thank you, Bhakti Stephen. Win-win-win. The four Kumaras are satisfied, Krishna is satisfied, and Jai and Vijay are satisfied. Krishna wanted to fight anyway, so if he hadn't orchestrated such an engagement in this particular lila, it would have happened in another way. So Krishna wanted to fight, and Jai and Vijay wanted to serve. And sometimes, although they are gatekeepers of Vaikuntha, but sometimes it's nice to have a little variety in your service. So they got to become demons and fight with Krishna. So the next verse reads, Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Etau Tau Parshadau Mayam, Jayo Vijaya Evacha, Kadarti Krityamam Yadvo Bhava Bhavakratam Atikramam. The personality of God had said, these attendants of mine, Jayan Vijay by name, have committed a great offense against you because of ignoring me. And Prabhupada comments in the purport. To commit an offense at the feet of a devotee of the Lord is a great wrong. Even when a living entity is promoted to Vaikuntha, there's still the chance that he may commit offenses. But the difference is that when one is in a Vaikuntha planet, even if by chance one commits an offense, he is protected by the Lord. This is the remarkable fact in the dealings of the Lord and the servitor, as seen in the present incident concerning Jai and Vijay. The word atikramam used herein indicates that in offending a devotee, one neglects the Supreme Lord himself. Now, this is something that we have to deal with. We are endeavoring to practice bhakti yoga in an environment which is almost anti-bhakti yoga. It's definitely a hostile environment, like trying to practice law and order in Baghdad. It's, you know, you've got as much hope as, what, a snowball in hell. Very, very difficult, very, very hostile. But as is always, there is a vast difference between what may appear to be a similar situation. Under the protection and shelter of the Supreme Lord, and out of his protection, acting only on one's own whims, and one is, the only thing he can rely on is his own prowess, which is so limited. A very difficult thing for me at one point to understand was how it is that we can act in the material world and be successful when we are taught that we should be humble, submissive, almost servile, and yet, and almost demeaning. In other words, one should try to find out his own faults rather than seeing the faults in others and how you are superior. A devotee of the Lord tries to find out his own faults and correct them as far as possible. So how do you act in the material world if you don't have faith in yourself? If you don't have confidence, if you're not filled with self-confidence, it's one of the first things that they try to teach you in a speaking course or any endeavor practically. You have to act with confidence in your own abilities. Then you can be successful in the world. So I put this to Srila Prabhupada, and he said, devotees do. They have full confidence in the ability of Krishna to succeed. And they're under his shelter, under his protection. So naturally, they can be confident. Tatra shir vijayo bhutir dhruvanitir matir mama. Sanjaya's opinion is that wherever there's Yogeshwar, Sri Krishna, and Arjuna, there will always be victory. There will always be success. Victory is an interesting word. It kind of indicates or smacks of win-lose. I win, you lose. But in Krishna consciousness also, the karmis do not lose when devotees are successful. They win. Everybody wins. So, in the execution of devotional service, being protected by the Lord, there is the possibility of offense. And in a hostile environment, we see that we create offenses, if not externally, at least in our mind. And part of that mindset is to see that others are committing offenses. And some actually are. Got caught there. Some actually are committing offenses. And it's very difficult in such a social milieu to understand how we're, because our understanding of Krishna consciousness is everything should be wonderful. Everything should go smoothly. Everyone should love each other. There should be no possibility of detecting any faults. It's perfect, and the people should become perfect, and everything should be hunky-dory. But it doesn't happen that way, and there may be a tendency for us to foolishly jump in and start criticizing or analyzing, overanalyzing the process. But we should know that such offenses will be rectified by the Lord if we simply, at least from our own side, and that's the only side that you can really control, your own circle of influence. You can't control others. You can only inspire others. You can't control them. And therefore, in an environment where we will definitely see, even for the next 10,000 years, we're going to see offenses. We're going to see problems. Because this is Martya Loka, Mrityu Loka. It's a place of death. It's a place of dosha nidhe. It's an ocean of bad qualities. And devotees also cannot help but be tinged to some degree. They're coming from a background where they were caught up in such an environment, and they were caught up in fault-finding. So here's a great example. Jayan Vijay actually did commit offense against the four Kumaras. These sages were so exalted, and so it is culturally it is understood that there are no doors that are closed to a sannyasi. That's a real sannyasi. Me, you may close the door. A real sannyasi who is completely pure, he's just like a child. Not childish, childlike. Sometimes a little of both, but he can walk in anywhere because he is your ever-well-wisher and free from fault. So the four Kumaras, what problem would there have been for Jayan Vijay to allow them to go into Vaikuntha? Would they have disrupted the atmosphere so much? No. In fact, they would have added or enhanced, or everyone would have benefited by their association. Of course, they did achieve something great by the whole Leela. They had a tendency to be somewhat, of course, there's a Kumara Sampradaya, but anyway, I'm not exactly sure of the technical details, but the Kumaras were somewhat Brahmavadis. They had a conception of Brahman. Now how they, if they had only a conception of Brahman, how they came to the gateway of Vaikuntha, I'll never know. But anyway, they did, by having the darshan of the Lord and smelling the tulsi leaves, the aroma of the tulsi leaves offered to the Lord, they were, as Ala Sukadev Goswami, they were immediately transformed to pure bhaktas. But still, nevertheless, there would have been no harm in allowing them, or it was a greater mistake, a greater offense to stop them, it would appear, than to just allow them to enter. So this offense, you can see the result. The Kumaras had the power, such power. And Brahma Tejas, is far more powerful than Kshatriya Tejas. And this has been proved again and again and again. Just like the sages, when they wanted to remove Venu, King Vena, who was very powerful, they simply cursed him dead. And when Vishwamitra stole Vasishtha's cow, he was such a powerful Kshatriya with many soldiers, and he attacked Vasishtha and was completely humiliated by the power of Vasishtha, who was a very transcendental and very potent spiritual person. So there are so many examples where Brahma Tejas has been proven to be more powerful. So here the Kumaras, they cursed Jai and Vijay, but the Lord intervened and brought about a very amicable, very pleasing situation. And of course, in this case, it wasn't exactly a, Krishna is not exactly the supreme ombudsman in one sense. He has power. I don't know that much about ombudsmanship. We'll have to hear from Braja Bihari, but from what I have, lectures I have attended on the subject, it's appears that the ombudsman hears both sides, and he can. It's not just that he is a messenger carrying back and forth each side's opinion, but he also has some ability to influence their improvement, or their rapprochement. But here, Vishnu, if he says, that's it. He's the supreme order giver. So he did correct things, not only because both sides accepted his version, but because it was definitely satisfying. By mistake, the doorman held the sages from entering Vaikuntha Loka, but because they were engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, their annihilation was not expected by advanced devotees. So it could have been, you don't mess with the sadhus. They have the power to burn you up. Now, we don't see those kind of sadhus nowadays walking around on our streets, but I've seen some pretty paranormal things in India at Kumbh Mela time. I've really seen some pretty far out sadhus literally lying on beds of nails, or swallowing beds of nails, or doing some things that are not trick photography, because I don't think they own cameras, and it's not mass hypnosis. And they just have certain potencies. I've yet to see anyone climb up a rope that is leading up into the sky. That's what I'm looking for. But there are sages in the Himalayas who have some kind of shakti. And so when they cursed Jai and Vijay, they could have annihilated them, theoretically. But because these two servants of Lord Vishnu were protected by him, Kaunteya Puti Jani Hiname Bhakta Pranashati, it means both materially and spiritually. Your creeper is protected, and in many cases your physical situation, which allows you to engage in bhakti yoga, is also preserved. The Lord's presence on the spot was very pleasing to the hearts of the devotees. The Lord understood that the trouble was due to his lotus feet not being seen by the sages, and therefore he wanted to please them by personally going there. The Lord is so merciful that even if there is some impediment for the devotee, he himself manages matters in such a way that the devotee is not bereft of having audience at his lotus feet. There is a very good example in the life of Haridas Thakur. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was residing at Jagannath Puri, Haridas Thakur, who happened to be Mohammedan by birth, was with him. In Hindu temples, especially in those days, no one but a Hindu was allowed to enter. Although Haridas Thakur was the greatest of all Hindus in his behavior, he considered himself a Mohammedan and did not enter the temple. Lord Chaitanya could understand his humility. And since he did not go to see the temple, Lord Chaitanya himself, who was non-different from Jagannath, used to come and sit with Haridas Thakur daily. Here in Srimad Bhagavatam, we also find the same behavior of the Lord. His devotees were prevented from seeing his lotus feet, but the Lord himself came to see them on the same lotus feet for which they aspired. It is also significant that he was accompanied by the goddess of fortune. The goddess of fortune is not to be seen by ordinary persons. But the Lord was so kind that although the devotees did not aspire for such an honor, he appeared before them with the goddess of fortune. So, Bhaktisiddhanta once commented that one could speak on any particular verse in Srimad Bhagavatam for months together. He in fact spoke for 3 months on one verse. Of course, I believe it was the very first verse, which is full of transcendental meaning, but and very long verse, but still there's so much here that one can understand from the Lord's behavior, from the behavior of the Kumaras, and from the behavior of Jaya and Vijay. So, although we can understand from it, of course it goes without saying that in general Vaishnavas do not curse people. And that's not the lesson we're supposed to pick up here. But one important thing is, and it's really a truism that requires elucidation. Although it's quite obvious and simple, any problems that we experience in the material world as devotees are more or less due to our lack of meditation on Krishna by not chanting our rounds nicely, by not executing our devotional service in a humble mood, thinking that I am blessed by the opportunity to render devotional service. One of the biggest problems that I have as I go around the world and I speak to large gatherings of Sunday feast visitors, congregations, wherein there are often at least 50% or more Indians, is that they don't seem to understand that they're the winners when it comes to devotional service. They're the ones who benefit. Brahmacharis do not need a temple. A brahmacharis can travel in a van and preach and do Harinam and distribute books and, you know, do so many things. They have no schedule as such. They can make one, but there's nothing. They can always get a little roti, a little kapra, a little makan, a little food, a little place to stay, anywhere they can stay, and a little cloth. Kapra means cloth. But the temple is here to give an opportunity to congregational devotees to come and clean the temple floor. Even though they're CEO of IBM or BMI or whatever it is, even though they have big, big egos, they get an opportunity to sweep before Jagannath's cart. They get an opportunity to bow their jeweled, turban-headed, ugly mass of flesh, their heads, they get a chance to bow their heads down to Krishna. And that's such a wonderful opportunity. Krishna is so kind that he's allowing them to approach him by serving the deity, by serving. Maybe they can't go into the deity room and do the aarti, maybe they can't cook in the kitchen, but every part of the temple is simply an extension of Radharani's kitchen. So if they sweep the floor, they're so benefited. But they don't understand the principle that if you don't have devotional service to do, then you should demand it. You should go and ask for it, beg for it. Because that is the way by which you will be purified and you will develop the eyes to see Krishna. You will develop enough credits that you'll have an opportunity to serve Krishna on the transcendental platform. So, our problems are often caused by lack of adherence to the very simple principles that Prabhupada gave us. We speculate, we change, we reduce, we invent, but all we have to do is chant Manmana Bhava Madbhakto. Prabhupada would quote that verse so often. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime. Krishna is giving his promise. If we just bow down to him, become his devotee, offer all the fruits of our work to him, then we'll go back to Godhead. And if we don't do that, aprapyamam, mrityu sansara vartmani, we won't achieve Krishna. But of course, as devotees, we'll get another chance. But we should not look to that. We should. It's so easy to become perfect. So when something untoward, adverse happens in a devotee's life, he can definitely consider it a great blessing to perhaps correct some minor defect or maybe some major defect in his meditation on Krishna. But certainly once you have attempted to raise yourself on the path of devotional service, you're wired in for good. Krishna won't let you go. You may stumble, may even fall, but sooner or later, your own mind, or by Krishna's arrangement, you're going to have to get back up. So it's like, it's morning time, you've got to get up. You think, well, you know, the snooze button. Let me press the snooze button 3 or 4 times. But really, what's the use in a snooze button? You get 5 extra minutes sleep. It's really going to change your whole day, right? You've just had 6 hours and you want 5 extra minutes, or press it twice, 10. Might as well just get up and get on with it. And Krishna, he's so kind that he takes care of his attendants, Jai and Vijay, even in their supposedly suffering condition. And he'll take care of us also. And there are different situations. I've seen them all. I've been in temples where there were only 3 or 4 of us. 3 at one point. I've been in temples where my base is in a temple where we have 200, 300 people for Mangalarti. A lot of them congregation. And then we have Sunday feast where there are thousands and thousands of people. We get about 25,000 people on a Sunday in Bombay. Both have their advantages, but overall, a small temple is a very good place to get important guidance in the process of devotional service, to practice and experience yourself freely without any hindrance, and to do some important service. You're irreplaceable in some respects. All right. Any questions or comments? Yes, Pramatirtha.
Maybe if I read on that point, you're talking about your instructions with Prabhupada. on one hand, being humble, and I guess on the other hand, being assertive.
Yeah. I think it revolves around your meditation that I'm nothing more than the servant of Krishna, and the servant's business is to carry out the order of his master, irregardless of, it's kind of like the army. Ours is not to reason why, ours is but to do and die. You know, the biggest cult in the whole USA. You know what the biggest cult is? Jack Nicholson. No, the Marine Corps. It's the heaviest cult. But they're the most effective too. Elite Corps, the Rangers, they don't become so effective by wishy-washy democracy. They become effective because they buy in. They know what they're getting when they sign up, but they buy in to a process which leads them to a goal which they consider to be important, and they do what they need to achieve that goal, and they're very assertive, but they're under to a degree, I guess, they're under their, in any army unit, tight army unit that I've ever associated with, and as a young man I was, you know, in the military all the way up to college. There was a sense that we are what we are because of our sergeant major. because of our captain, because of our lieutenant, because of our whatever, our leader. There was a lot of respect given to the leader. So here we have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as our leader. Who could be more perfect than Him? And the more we see, it is a fact, you can't avoid it, because when we don't have the facility, when Krishna takes away something, you know, I keep in New York, I had an office there when I was the GBC, and it's still there, the little page I took out of a magazine, some big multinational company, and they had a poster, a page from a magazine, they had a picture of a man, a ventriloquist, and he had this little puppet sitting on his knee beside him. And they said, the trouble with hands-on management, and then the next part down below was when you take your hands off, and the mannequin, or what do you call it, the ventriloquist, his puppet was all over, displayed all over the floor. So if Krishna takes anything away from us or disturbs something we can't control, but if he takes away he can take away our voice very easily, get some disease in the larynx and can't speak. All of us are, I don't know if you wore glasses all your life, but I didn't. When I was young, my mom told me, eat carrots and you'll always have 20/20 vision, you know. I eat lots of carrots, but my eyes are going now. More and more they're starting to go. And it's very annoying because I was so proud of my sight. You know, I'm like a crow or something, or not a crow, an eagle, I can see, you know, a mile away. I can see some pus on a windowsill or something. I don't know. You know, I have very good long range vision. I was so proud of that. Riding in a car, and, you know, 3 blocks away, I see a sign and the driver can't see it, and I tell him, you know, give me a kind of pride. But now my eyesight is going and it hurts. And it's Krishna, he's taking it away. Just, you know, chill out, you rascal. Don't be so proud. And so therefore we are dependent on him in everything we do. So why not give him the credit? And then actually the interesting thing is when you try to take the credit for doing something, you also take responsibility for the results. And it sets up a dynamic, especially in your heart, anticipation, always wondering, because you don't know. You're not Trikalagya. So you really don't know whether you're going to succeed or not, and you fear if you don't succeed you'll be rejected. So it pollutes the whole atmosphere, and any hope for spontaneous activity is destroyed by that kind of claiming that I'm responsible for the results of my activities. But when you just hand it all over to Krishna, not irresponsibly, but you just recognize that he's the doer, kartaham iti manyate. When people think I'm the doer, they lose. But when they realize that Krishna's the karta, he's the doer, then they're, you know, they can act. They're free. They can give all enthusiasm. And be quite confident. Of course, there's another adjustment that has to be made there, that what is success in this endeavor? Is it quantitative results? Or is it just the act of pleasing Krishna and all good will be done in the way Krishna wants it to be done? Just like someone came to Bombay in the early days before we had a temple, and Bengali boy, he was an excellent cook. I think his name was Ras Bihari or Kunja Bihari, something like that. Anyway, Prabhupada commented that he cooks just like Radharani. But then after some time, when he got inside, got the confidence of people, he ran away with a relatively large sum of money at that time. So then Prabhupada said that sometimes Krishna sends people to steal from him so that he can punish them by putting them down into the deeper modes of material nature. In other words, that's what they deserve, and he gives them an opportunity to achieve it. We were thinking, oh, we lost the money. But Prabhupada was seeing how we were, the money is not an issue. Prabhupada used to say, and it's so true, that money's just hanging there in the sky. You just have to put your hand out and take it. He said, I can give you so many schemes. Yes, that's what you're doing. I can give you so many schemes for making money. Money is not a problem if you work intelligently and enthusiastically. And if Krishna wants it to happen, of course. But you have to understand success by Krishna vision, by Shastra Chakshus, by Krishna Chakshus, the eyes of Krishna, the eyes of Shastra. If you do that, you will be able to act with full enthusiasm, with full confidence, and realize Tatra Shir Vijaya Bhutir, that you are victorious. It doesn't require your own it doesn't require you to get into anxiety about changing something that you can't change anyway. His answer really satisfied me, because and the other thing is that when you're acting with full confidence, it may not be that in the battlefield you will constantly be remembering that. A favorite one of mine is that Arjuna did not win the battle of Kurukshetra by chanting japa. Now, this is a balance, but when your life is surcharged with atma samarpanam, with sharanagati, with surrender to Krishna, in the battlefield or in your place of work or action, it may almost feel like it's your own ego. You know, it's hard to discriminate. You may feel that this confidence that I'm feeling is mine. It's not totally surrendered to Krishna. But that's not true. We're like the green bird that merges in a green tree. We're merged with Krishna, but we still have our own separate identity and spirit. But we're merged with Krishna. At the end of the day, we know it's Krishna who is achieving success for us. We acknowledge that. And it's even the karmis, in the sense, you know, the broader sense, the Mahabhagavat sense, everybody's engaged in serving Krishna. No need to preach. Everyone's serving. Some realize it, some don't. But everybody's serving Krishna. So, in that sense, everybody's getting results by Krishna's Shabda ke palusham rishu. I am the ability in man. So whatever is happening is because Krishna is the ability in man. Some may not know that verse, some may not realize it, some may not articulate it, they may understand something about it, but it is a fact. So we can carry on with full confidence as long as we have some connection. This is the problem. This is where everything breaks down. If we don't have a regular program for remembering Krishna, Allah Srimad Bhagavatam class or satsang groups or some kind of regular program, as the one that Srila Prabhupada set up. Now, of course, in the beginning, you need very strict, disciplined, regimented slots that you can fit into. And the difference here is when I was in America doing Sankirtan or doing deity worship or cooking in the kitchen or whatever of the other services I did, it was always organized and there was everything in its place and a place for everything. And you were a Sankirtan devotee. When you started to go on Sankirtan, your book bag was there, it was filled with books, the van was waiting, you got in, you were dropped off at your spot, you were picked up, all you had to do was distribute the books. Or deity worship, you know, the procedure was there, you were trained up by the previous, everything was organized, you didn't have to figure out how to do something new or innovate even to that much degree. But when I went to India, it was a whole other ball game. There were no systems like that set up. If you wanted to preach, you had to have your own appointments, you had to have your own arrangement for getting around, everything, A to Z, you had to take care of your own prasadam. I remember Giray Swami and I would come back late at night after preaching hard all day long, exhausted, coming back in the, you know, sardine can trains where you're packed arm to nose, armpit, nose to armpit. I called it the nose to armpit experience. Somebody's holding on and your nose is in their armpit and you're packed in. And there would be no prasadam saved. Gira Swami was cool. I freaked out. So we had to go to the store and buy these little cubes of Amul cheese and see if we could find some crackers. And when we got a little more together, then we arranged for a hired cook and, you know, we had something. But you really had to be a rugged individual. Individualist. So either way, whatever situation you fit into is fine, especially as you get older. There's a tendency to become a little bit more independent, but same principle. You have to associate with devotees and you have to have some kind of regular program where you're hearing Krishna Katha. Then when you go out in the field, you will be surcharged, you will be able to negotiate business deals, you will be able to give seminars, you will be, whatever your work takes you through.